Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
We coming to H-Town. Let's get the work in, man. Let's go.
Great day. Great day. Oh, give me some juice, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Let's do it.
Called bird strike. Astros sweep the Diamondbacks. Josh Hader remains perfect here in Chase Field. 11 and two-thirds without a run over his career. And Blummer, the Astros keep rolling some way, somehow. Now the best record in the American League.
You know, that's the thing, the transition and the ease of how we went into things day. Today, it was really cool to see because I'm used to first days being just a debacle where the ball is on the ground, snap count is off, defense, busting assignments. But to have a really clean operation, very pleased with that, you know, because the guys have been away for a while. They haven't done football, so to come out and get the football part right, and that's alignment, assignment, being where you're supposed to be, that's half the battle. And I'm very pleased with our coaches, first and foremost, for having their guys ready to go.
It's a good day yesterday, man. It was a really, really good day yesterday. The Astros win. They complete the sweep against the Arizona Diamondbacks. And, out here at Texans training camp, for a day with just jerseys on, no pads, nothing like that, it looked crisp, man. The operation looked pretty smooth for a shortened practice yesterday. They just went maybe about 70, 80 minutes yesterday practicing. They'll be back out here today. We're out here today live at Texans training camp as we welcome you in on a Thursday morning. And it is Payne and Pendergast as we welcome back Seth C. Payne, Pope Zaza. What's up, dude? How are you?
I'm good, man. I apologize for it's. Can you hear me?
I can barely hear you, Ben. You're going to need to turn Seth up a little bit.
Ah.
There we go. There we go. All right. How you doing, buddy?
Hey. Okay. I'm good, man. As you know, I've had a little bit of an ordeal, so I'm stuck in Oregon, and this was a challenge. I applaud you for not freaking out as I screwed 19 things up this morning.
That's
I'm
okay.
This is as my phone died in the middle of the night, and I didn't know how to connect. There's two things. Yeah, there's two things. One, that the Astros are back to what they do, which is sweeping teams despite having a triple-A lineup. But the biggest thing about the Texans yesterday was the fact that, you know, that sounds simple, what D'Amico had said in the opener, that, hey, usually there's a lot of hiccups and everything. It's so true. On the first day of camp, usually they'll start a period over. Or, you know, the quarterback, the snap count can't get right. The very first year of the franchise, we actually had to start a practice completely over midway through because David Carr had fumbled like seven snaps. They just couldn't get it, and that was like a week before the first game. So, the little things and just executing without all the hiccups, it does feel like Nick Caley, is really all about just execution. Remember last year, Bobby Slowick would say, well, we got to execute. And he almost said it like it was the players' fault that they weren't executing. I think Caley, look, the X's and O's matter, but Caley just really wants things to be crisp. And that's a stark departure from the way the offensive line especially operated last year.
Yeah, yeah. It was really interesting yesterday, Seth, because there was a lot of questions, obviously, about the offensive line and the operation of the offense. CJ met with the media, so his newfound control over what they do offensively, you know, it's hard when they're just out here. They only did two 11-on-11 sessions yesterday. Neither of them were terribly long, and especially the first one, way more of an emphasis on the run game. The install period that they did was practically all run game. So that's the type of stuff out of training camp, especially when they're not in pads, that's not the most enthralling kind of thing. When you got them installing run plays where nobody's allowed to really touch each other violently or go to the ground, there you could tell there's a major emphasis on running the football with this team. And a lot of the questions, and we'll play some of the audio here, there was a lot of that whole kind of cryptic reading into the answers as, yes, answers about the current version of the Texans, but also with a sort of acknowledgement that all these things last year were a big, big problem for the team. We're going to play some of the audio in a second. But that was my huge takeaway yesterday is, wow, this is not lip service to running the football. And B, there are some things that they are doing now, some very basic things that this team is doing now that they weren't doing last season.
That's and the cool thing about that is, okay, they're working on the run game and no pads, and what can you do with that? Because it's not going to be very competitive. That, yeah, last year, Sean, you remember when I could tell that the O-line cabal had been trying to feed information to the media, to their favorite journalists and whatnot, that, hey, well, look, don't worry about the run game. It's hard to run the ball during training camp when you can't, you know, you can't cut block and you can't go full bore. And I'm like, okay, the other teams can run the ball well in training camp, even though they're not going full speed. Yeah. So I don't think there's going to be any excuse making like that. There's not going to be any. So when you're in no pads, okay, obviously you're not going to have the physical element of it, but it's the footwork, the technique, the being cohesive and everybody having the timing down. That's the stuff that you're working on. And it was just gone from the offense last year.
Yeah. Let's get to just a few takeaways from day one out here at training camp. We'll get to the Astros. If not at the end of this segment, we'll hit them at the top of the next segment here because that sweep is significant of the Diamondbacks yesterday. They are tied for the best record in the American League right now. Miraculously, with an outfield yesterday, it was Cooper Hummel, Taylor Trammell, and I forget who was he, and Chaz McCormick in right field. That was the starting outfield yesterday for the team that took the lead in the American League race. But let's start with some D'Amico Ryans yesterday. The offensive line was the big topic yesterday, especially at the outset of practice. The left to right first unit that they sent out there yesterday, and they mixed and matched a ton after this, so probably not a ton to read into it, was Cam Robinson from left to right. Cam Robinson, Laken Tomlinson, Jarrett Patterson, Titus Howard, and Ariante Ursary was trotting out there with the ones yesterday. Now, again, eventually they started mixing and matching and whatnot, but the very first unit to go out there to do drills had Ariante Ursary, the rookie out of Minnesota, at right tackle. Here was D'Amico Ryans on the offensive line and how they're looking so far and how they're working so far.
For the O-line, you know, Will, it's always tough. It's hard for me to, you continue to evaluate O-line. It's hard when you don't have pads on because that's how the game is played up front, O-line, D-line. You got to put the pads on to have a true evaluation of how that'll look. But the small things that stuck out to me and what Cole has done a really good job of, just those small intricate details that you know they'll translate, pads or not, and that's hand placement, your feet being right, like where are your shoulders, where are your eyes, the communication, all of those little things that really allow those guys to bind together as one. I think that's where y'all see the growth in our offensive line, those guys being on the same page, they're being intentional with how they're working an individual. It's very deliberate, and so I see that translates. And that's what I expect from all of our coaches, to be deliberate in how you prepare your guys individual. That's what I've seen throughout the spring with Cole, with Zach, and that will translate. It's shown up here. They've done a great job communicating today, and that'll keep allowing those guys to be the best version of themselves and do a great job of run blocking first and foremost as a unit, and then also protecting CJ.
That was one of several cuts yesterday, Seth, where it was like, okay, that's great that they're doing these things. These sound like very basic things that weren't getting done last year. You know, things like communicating.
yeah. And this is where it's, you know, I always worry about with new offensive coordinators that they want to be complex. You know, they want to do everything. Bobby Slowick, and this isn't just individual to Bobby Slowick. Mike Vrabel did it in his first time as a coordinator, a defense coordinator with the Texans. They want to just do everything all at once, and they want to have the most brilliant looking performance that ever was. So In that first game versus the Ravens 2 years ago, they were trying to do everything. They were trying to throw the whole kitchen sink out there and all this pre-snap motion and everything. And you had a rookie quarterback that just wasn't in a bunch of everybody was new to the system, and they weren't ready for it. So they had to pull it back a little bit. I think Kaylee has, you know, probably just learned by observation over the years that's a hazard, is that you got to really start with the basics and hammer those and then move on from there. So, so far, so good. Obviously, it's no pads. And I some of my favorite Casario answers yesterday were just when people would ask him, you know, like, hey, what's your favorite thing about this team? Or, like, are they going to be really good? And you're like, right, look, we'll see. You know, like, it's all talk right now. We'll see.
Yeah. And, no, every answer where he was asked something like that was just something about they have a great attitude and they like to work hard. You know, it's like, okay, yeah. That's good job.
Yeah, there is. That is the thing that Caserio seemed like he gushed the most about, was actually the fact that it seems like we've got a lot of guys that actually really genuinely want to work hard, and that probably reminds him of his New England days a little bit.
No doubt. They were hammering the run game yesterday, as I mentioned. That was the biggest things for me. The offensive line talk and just the shuffle there. That it's the total opposite of the cabal's got nothing this year, Seth. This is the total opposite of last year, where everybody was in ink and tattooed as to what their position was going to be. They are truly mixing and matching. They hammered the run game. I mentioned that. Bobby Sloak, you tell me, Seth. I'm going to play this audio from D'Amico right here, and he was asked about what he likes, what he loves about Nick Caley's offense. This was construed by many as perhaps a stray towards Bobby Sloak.
What excites me most about Caley's offense is that it's evolving, and it's being tailored toward the Houston Texans and the guys that we have on our roster. So what excites me the most is not just a copy and paste from other places that he's been, and he's been very successful at other places, but he's been very, very thorough with the installation process of where do we want to put our guys, what position, what's the best spot for our guys to be in. So you look at it through that lens, it's going to be about the Houston Texans. And that's what I love most about the offense, is him being able to be adaptable and put our guys where they need to be.
You and I have spent a lot of time dissecting audio from various offensive players on the team that said that thing. To hear D'Amico Ryans himself kind of, I don't say inadvertently, but kind of just by describing Caley's offense, kind of describing what Bobby Sloak's offense was not, was pretty jarring yesterday, I thought.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that it's almost impossible to say something nice about a new guy without it sounding like an insult of the old guy.
On this
guy.
Show, so it sure is. As long as I'm here, it will be. I'll tell you that.
It's like saying, like, hey, what do you like about your new wife? Like, she didn't sleep with my boss. Yeah, that's that's a pretty clear indicator that that your old wife did something. Yeah, well, like whether he intended it that way or not, I think it was pretty clear. And, you know, D'Amico himself had said that they need to be able to adapt better, you know, and make adjustments better. And I mean, the second half, so there's one thing, just there's on the macro level, how are you going to build this offense? But then on the micro level, just second half adjustments. And I know people will tell you that they're overrated, et cetera, et cetera. Like, you're making adjustments the entire game long. And the Texans were just so much worse in the second half offensively because Bobby couldn't adapt. So, yeah, the adaptability on multiple fronts hopefully is a lot different.
We will make sure the Astros get some love here in the 6 o'clock hour as well, coming up next. Who would have thought that they would have 17 guys on the IL on the day they put their 17th guy on the IL, or the day after they take over the lead in the American League? It's unbelievable. So we'll get to that. And also, Seth mentioned Nick Caserio met with the media yesterday. He was asked about probably the biggest Nick Caserio topic of the last month and a half. The poison pill that he dropped on the rest of the NFL by guaranteeing Jaden Higgins' contract. Nick Caserio addresses that for the first time. The audio, we have that for you. Also talks about one new player on the team that was somewhat controversial, and who is the guy that we think might be the most improved on this team based on Nick Caserio's assessment. We will get to all of that coming up here in the next segment as we're live from Texans training camp day two here at the Methodist Training Center.
Ground ball towards the middle and through. Short's going to score. Heading to third, Trammell. 4-3 Astros. Christian Walker, a huge RBI against his former team.
Yeah, and I was really hoping for that to happen that way, so he could live, you know, his old hometown in a high note. And he had a really good series. Big knock there at the end. But I thought these guys, they came out and they took care of business.
All right, that was Joe Espada. Christian Walker. Christian Walker has started to look like the Christian Walker that the Astros thought they were getting when they gave him a 3-year, $60 million deal. He's been really good the month of July. Thank God, because he's one of the few guys that they had planned on having in this lineup at the beginning of the year who's actually in it. Seth, they threw that lineup yesterday. When they throw the defensive formation up on the screen, you know, they show left, center, right, and the whole infield there. And I'm looking, and it's no exaggeration. Like, that lineup, they granted a getaway day lineup, so it would have been a kind of a skeleton crew anyways, But you got no Jose Altuve and no Cam Smith out there, while you have Jake Myers, Jeremy Pena, Yordan Alvarez, and Isak Paredes on the injured list. And I'm going, this is, you could have played a game. Is this an every, is this a middle of July lineup, or is this a West Palm Beach lineup? And you, like, I think most people would have guessed that's a West Palm Beach lineup. And yet, they sweep the Diamondbacks. They're in first place in the American League right now. It's incredible.
What if I told you, don't worry, Sean, Zach Short and Taylor Trammell are going to be in a high-leverage position in the ninth inning. But and guess what they're going to do? They're going to bunt.
Mosquito bites.
Both of them. Yeah, and it's going to spark a rally. Yeah, there's nothing you could have predicted about this at the beginning of the season. I mean, Taylor Trammell was on the, you know, on the roster, obviously, and injured. But, gosh, I've gotten almost like a sick fascination with seeing. When the lineup comes out, I'm like, yeah, give it to me.
Yeah.
Give it to me.
You're not winning.
Wait, I know all these guys. No, I want somebody anonymous, a stranger from the park. Put him in there.
It's incredible. It really is incredible. And highlighted by the whole thing. You talk about the everyday lineup yesterday. Highlighting the whole thing is Brandon Walter, who, if you had to play in a playoff series right now, he would be your third starter after Hunter Brown and Framber Valdez. I don't think it's even I don't even think there's a debate right now, because the guys they're trotting out there on the regular are Hunter, Framber, Brandon Walter, Colton Gordon, who's been fine, but he's not been as good as Brandon Walter, and until he went on the IL this week, Lance McCullers, who's been a circus. So Brandon Walter has been one of the most underrated, valuable guys, and he's only got one win to his credit, but he's got a ton of really good outings. Like, he didn't win the game yesterday, but he kind of won the game yesterday. He gave up a home run on the first pitch, and then only gave up one base runner the rest of the way for seven innings yesterday.
Well, this team's going to go as the pitching goes. That's during this last skid, the offense was actually a little bit above average. It's just in the month of July, it's been more about the pitching hadn't been quite as stellar as it had before. Yeah. So especially when the relievers, the bullpen has just been relied upon so much. So when the younger guys or the guys that are less heralded or less experienced, like Brandon Walter, can start to give you consistently more innings and consistent performances, it's going to be as simple as that. I've stopped trying to figure the lineup and the offense and Christian Walker in general out, and just know that, man, this team, if they're pitching the way they're capable of pitching, and if they can keep from running out of gas in the second half of the season, that I'm not really putting any limits on them, because I don't know. I still don't know who's coming back from injury. Obviously.
Well, there's the whole injury thing, but they do small ball really well. They've been the beneficiary of some mistakes made by the opposition. You know, I'm thinking of the Seattle series this weekend where the floodgates open for those 11 runs. You know, a lot of that was, you know, J.P. Crawford just botches a pop fly, and all of a sudden they are really good at taking advantage of the mistakes that the opposition make. They're very opportunistic. You know,
it is, and they're so good defensively, too. And that's something, just as you mentioned, with J.P. Crawford, he had a rough – we didn't have a chance to talk about the rough series he had. Just, like, continually getting screwed by the umpires or by himself.
I liked it.
The fact that the Astros are so good at fielding, it's all these little things on the margins that end up making a difference. The thing that's still just – the thing that doesn't – I know it makes sense, yet at the same time, I hate that they're such a good defensive team, and yet that they're – They cannot hold runners on the bases to save their lives. I just don't want to see a playoff exit happen in some game where there's seven steals.
Yeah. You were gone for a few days. I know you were following it from afar, but while you were gone, just to hammer this home, I don't know if you knew this, but while you were gone, Bryce Matthews turned into the most hyped 167 hitter in the history of baseball.
As I predicted silently as I was hiking on a trail up here, I said, you know what? I think Bryce Matthews is about to really turn the corner on this.
You're right.
And lo and behold, all the squirrels and the elk and everybody else that may have heard it, they heard it. And they know exactly who to call in the Pacific Northwest to talk Houston sports.
That's exactly right. All right, Seth Payne, Sean Pendergast with you. We are live at Texans training camp. Good job, Astros. We'll talk about them in headlines coming up next. Nick Caserio met with the media yesterday and talked plenty about the team and what he's excited about with this team moving forward as we head into the 2025 season. The thing I was most anxious to hear him talk about, Landry Locker actually asked him about this at the press conference yesterday, and it was the, okay, what do you make of you guaranteeing Jaden Higgins' contract and the ripple effect that that had on the rest of the second round of the draft? You recall Jaden Higgins' contract fully guaranteed. He's the second pick of the second round. That had never happened before. The highest it had ever been before is like 92% guaranteed. It was exactly what you and I thought it was, Seth, which is like, eh, it's 95%. Eh, let's just cut to the chase here on this one. Like, you know, I think Nick is like, yeah, probably deserves to be fully guaranteed. Here you go. Here was Nick's answer to that. And Nick, kind of aghast at how big a deal this became around the league.
We're trying to get ahead and stay ahead on trends. Eventually, it was probably going to get there anyways. So we just felt like that was the right thing for us to do. And I think what happened after that, honestly, it was a non-story that was made into a story. But, I mean, everything kind of worked itself out. I think all of us in the league, myself included, have anticipated, you know, at some point, you know, probably the first four or five, you're going to end up at that spot anyways. So why wait around? Why kind of bicker back and forth, go back and forth on the agents? Like, get to a resolution. I mean, I think people that kind of know me and that negotiate with me, I'm kind of a bottom line guy. So let's get to the bottom line. Let's not hem and haw. And, you know, if we think everybody's comfortable with it, then we're going to go ahead and move forward. It didn't really impact Ursary, you know, which is a part of the second round. I think that was more of some other factors that led to kind of the stall there. So we're always going to handle business however we see fit, try to do it logically, be pragmatic about it, try to do it in a responsible way. So, again, the off season, not a lot of people, there's not a lot of things to talk about. So when I start being around in the Wall Street Journal, like, I mean, you know that, like, this is kind of, it's a nothing deal.
Okay. So let's
I'm not that smart, believe me.
Okay. Sorry, Nick. I didn't mean to step on you there. Let me just preface this by saying I have no problem with him fully guaranteeing Jaden Higgins' contract. When the threshold before Seth was like 92%, and if he feels Higgins is a safe enough bet where he fully guarantees it, I love playing the little game, though. Imagine if Bill O'Brien had said that.
Yeah.
Here you go. Yeah. Fully guaranteed contract, kid.
I think I had seen somebody say that Caserio has been spending recklessly, and I still disagree with that, just in that he's spending differently than other teams are doing it. And you know what happened? All right, Nick did it first. Nick saw that that's where the trend was going, was the fully guaranteed money for the guys at the top of the second round. So we just did it instead of bickering it or turning into a major thing. And lo and behold, okay, if teams are going to follow that precedent, then there you go. Hey, Derek Stingley's contract, you know, $30 million a year. Can't believe he did that. Okay, well, then Sauce Gardner signs that contract. And I think some people will say, well, yeah, but the Texans are setting that precedent, so you can't say that they're – yeah, but guess what? Everybody else is following it to the point where Derek Stingley's contract is going to be a bargain compared to other top cornerbacks. So yeah. I'm cool with it. I like that there's just kind of a not getting caught up in the minor stuff, like the trifling details, or, you know, arguing about what the shape of the table is going to be at the peace summit. It just like this stuff doesn't matter.
The Stingley thing, they're two different things too, and it's appropriate to bring up the Stingley thing, Seth, because you're right. There were people around the league that thought, oh my God, J.C. Horn is making 25, and Nick jumped all the way up to 30 for Derek Stingley. That one is a little bit more, if you're a fan of the Texans, where you go, okay, because that actually, you are literally spending more money. This Jaden Higgins thing is a big nothing burger. You're not it has zero effect on your salary cap. You're just guaranteeing the rest of his deal. Like, it's not impacting guaranteeing Jaden Higgins, unless he sucks and you got to pay out the rest of the guarantee at some point. We'll cross that bridge if we come to it. I can tell you from having watched him at a few of these practices, he's not going to suck. It was the exact answer I thought Nick would give, which is like, yeah, we were almost there anyways. Why not go ahead and do it? Why is everybody getting so upset? Why does this wind up in the Wall Street Journal was my favorite part of the whole thing. There's an article in the Wall Street Journal about this.
I think it's pretty evident there that Nick just wanted everybody to know that he reads the Wall Street Journal. You know, I opened up The Economist and the Wall Street Journal and several other very niche. I don't think that it's something that to be concerned about, because for one, the Texans haven't Like, they haven't spent heavily into the future.
Yeah.
They're not the team that 2 years from now is spending the most or what have you. He's doing it in doses, especially with the guaranteed money. He's way more comfortable handing out guaranteed money than a lot of other GMs are. And I've told you multiple times, Sean, I think that's best for the team, and it's also best for what a lot of players want. It's okay, it's a shorter-term contract, but it's guaranteed money, and you're renting instead of buying, you know, or you're leasing instead of purchasing, which in the case of football players is always a good idea.
Yes.
Hey, look, hey, you buy a nice vehicle and take care of it, by all means. You're going to keep it for 20 years if you take care of it right.
Yes.
But if you're going to drive it like a race car, then God, just lease it.
That's right. That's right. And you guys, the players, get driven by race cars, or like race cars. Yeah. There's no doubt about that. Hey, let's hear from Nick Caserio. I would say one of the more controversial moves, I guess, that we could say that Nick Caserio has made as GM would be signing Damon Arnett, the cornerback, just based on his priors, based on his past. He's turned over a new leaf, Arnett has. So here was Nick Caserio when he was asked yesterday by John McClain, which I would have had as minus 2,000 as the asker of the Damon Arnett question. The signing of Damon Arnett. Here was Nick Caserio on the Texans' thought process there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, a lot of thought goes into it, a lot of conversation. I think you can take all the information into consideration. You go through a pretty extensive vetting process, which we did. So I think where Damon is now relative to where he was earlier in his career is at a different point. You know, and you just are honest about those conversations. You know, I think Damon's trying to do the right things. Try to put himself in a position to take advantage of his opportunities. You know, we're inclined, and if we feel it's appropriate, to give somebody a second chance. We'll see how it goes. I mean, Damon's got to earn his opportunity, but he's been good to work with. He's had a good attitude. He's had a good approach. So we've always taken the approach, regardless of what's happened in the past, regardless of how grave or the gravity of the situation or what it is, understand what it is. And then when a player walks in our building, they kind of have a clean slate, and they're starting from scratch. So, you know, I think it's important just to be honest. Had conversations with, you know, with the McNairs and about his situation. So I'm not trying to hide anything. So you just kind of take it case by case and try to do the best we can with the information, the opportunities that are in front of us.
Yeah, I think with a guy like Damon Arnett, sometimes it's easier when it's a guy who's had extreme problems, because you know exactly what the issue is in terms of, okay, what do we have to, you know, because there's the guy outside the building and then the guy inside the building. And sometimes guys inside the building, you can't quite figure out exactly what the problem is. I don't know. People don't seem to like him. I don't know why. Damon Arnett, it's like, oh, no. I can read in the blotter exactly what happened.
Yeah. No, he's as long as he's not carrying guns around anymore.
yes. But it's a minimum salary contract. It is very much a tryout, and he kept his nose clean for a year while he was in the XFL or United Football League, whichever one.
Yeah, the UFL.
And look, hey, sometimes you just age out of your immature behavior, and you know, and you learn some things. One thing that Will had said yesterday that was intriguing to me was he said that we've got some people we can talk to that they hired, and I remember reading an article about one of the people on the fuzzy side of things, the life coaching type stuff. It wasn't Dylan Thompson. No,
okay.
It was somebody else.
So they've
stuff. You got to remember, you're in a high performance business, and very few of us grew up in high performance families. So you just, like, it's not like most people, no matter how good they are, and not regardless of whether they've had issues with a crime or not. You're just like, there's certain things you have to learn to really be a good teammate on a professional team at a really high level that the vast majority of people just, it's not really ingrained in them as kids. And some are more extreme than others. So I've always been fascinated by the teams that can kind of help guys accelerate the maturation process.
Yeah.
And I think part of that is having a philosophy that, like, look, yeah, guys make mistakes. Some guys are still teenagers when they're 24 years old.
Yeah.
And it doesn't mean that's going to be the end of the world for them. It's just we got to try to help a way to speed it up a little bit and to get guys focused on the things they should be focused on.
He's got a real opportunity, man. I mean, behind Stingley and Lassiter, there is plenty of opportunity to make this football team. The last thing on that one, Seth, and by the way, Cade Stover, we're not going to get to the audio in this segment, but I teased it. Cade Stover is the guy who's getting a ton of love around here, and specifically Nick Caserio volunteered that as a name yesterday. I thought the it was interesting that Nick mentioned at the very end there that they did talk to the McNairs about Damon Arnett. You know, like that there was it was that level of player, at least from a reputation standpoint, that they felt they needed to get ownership and just get the approval of ownership to make the move.
Yeah, that's that is interesting. I then when it comes to like what's the is there I wonder if they have a chart with a threshold for when do you call Callan Hanna? Yeah.
Yeah. All right, we're off and running here on a Thursday, day two of Texans training camp live out here. Let's get to headlines coming up next. Training camp, Astros win. We've got drama up north 4 hours from us, really in Oxnard right now because that's where the Cowboys are. This Micah situation. We'll get to all that in headlines coming up next.
Payne and Pendergast with today's headlines presented by Men's Tea Clinic.
All right, we're live from Texans training camp, Payne and Pendergast with you on a Thursday, day two today here at the Methodist Training Center. Day one was yesterday. We talked a little bit earlier in the show about observations from there. They hammered the run game real hard yesterday. When they did pass, it looked good. We'll talk more about that as we get into the 7 o'clock hour, but a lot of quick game stuff and it looked crisp. Really, not just CJ Stroud, Davis Mills had some nice throws. It was a good day yesterday out here. One of the big topics, Nick, with Nick Caserio and D'Amico Ryans both meeting with the media yesterday, was Jimmy Ward. They were both asked about Jimmy Ward, who of course was arrested in a domestic violence incident up in Montgomery County back in the middle of July, right after mandatory minicamp ended. And the legal process is playing out. His court date is set for, I believe, August 13th. His lawyer has said that he will be vindicated in all this. He remains on the team. He remains here. He's reported to camp. They both said that yesterday, Nick and D'Amico. He's here. He wasn't out at practice yesterday because he's recovering from foot surgery. So he is on the premises. He is in the building. Nick Caserio gave a very general answer saying we're letting the legal process play out, Seth. D'Amico Ryan's answer, I thought, was a little more interesting because he's got history with Jimmy Ward. He says himself here, Jimmy's the guy I've known the longest out of anybody here in the building on this team. Here's D'Amico Ryan's when he was asked about the Jimmy Ward situation yesterday.
Yeah, with Jimmy, it's unfortunate anytime something like that comes out in the news and that happens to one of your players. Jimmy's a guy that I've known the longest since I first started in the NFL. I've worked with Jimmy and know the type of guy that he is, and we'll just let the legal situation play itself out there.
I think it's interesting. The phrase there that jumped out at me the most is, I know what kind of guy, I'm paraphrasing, I know the type of guy he is. You know,
yeah, and this is kind of uncharted territory with the Texans when they've shown a little bit more leeway or latitude when it comes to guys that are potential character issues or what have you, like Damon Arnett.
Yep.
But this is a guy who's been on the team already and that D'Amico specifically wanted to come in for his veteran leadership.
Captain. He's a two-time captain.
Yeah. And this is the way the NFL has handled it. When there are domestic violence allegations or situations, there have been a lot of suspensions even when no charges were pressed or when guys were not found guilty. So there's a really good chance that Jimmy Ward's going to miss a good chunk of time. But then I think the Texans internally have to figure out exactly, all right, you know, based what we know about it, how are we going to handle this with Jimmy Ward moving forward? Because it's they've been more forgiving with certain things, I think, than maybe they had been, than they'd been known for as an organization.
It ultimately might be, you know, even if he's exonerated of it, you know, that's the league is going to do an investigation where whatever plays out legally won't matter by and large to the league. Yeah. They're going to look into it themselves. And when it comes to dishing out a suspension, you know, so that'll be an interesting thing to see if the NFL's investigation mirrors whatever the verdict is in the courtroom come August.
That's one thing. Oh, I can't remember which case it was, but the NFL, they seem to have figured some things out because the NFL's stuck in a situation where they want to investigate and find out as much as they can. But if they don't do it the right way, it can be perceived as the NFL trying to bully or intimidate an alleged victim or what have you. But in a recent case, one of the attorneys actually praised the NFL for the way they handled it and how they talked to people. I think because in going back to the Deshaun Watson situation and a couple from a few years ago, it did almost sound like the investigators weren't just they were. I don't think they were trained necessarily as much, so they figured some things out. But the NFL genuinely, you could say, just for PR purposes alone, and then hopefully for other good reasons too, they want to be sure that they get to the bottom of things so that they can handle it, because they know that victims don't always, you know, for multiple reasons, sometimes they pull back and yep. don't, you know, they don't want to follow through with charges.
Yep. So that's its update on Texans training camp. We'll talk more about that at the top of the hour at 7 o'clock. We'll dig deeper on day one and upcoming day two of camp. Astros win yesterday 4-3 over the Arizona Diamondbacks. They sweep the Diamondbacks. The Astros this morning, as we look at the standings, are tied atop the American League with the Toronto Blue Jays. You know, two somewhat unlikely teams. The Astros, considering their injury situation, and Toronto just is a team that feels like they've underachieved the last few years. They're the two best teams in the American League right now. Brandon Walter was outstanding yesterday for the Astros. Gave up a home run on his first pitch and then didn't give up anything after that. Gave him seven strong innings. Here was Joe Espada on the performance of Brandon Walter.
Dude, huge, huge, the job he's done. And, you know, you feel comfortable with him, how efficient he is and how much strikes he throws and how deceptive he is, that he can go deep in the game just because they're not comfortable at bats. And he's been phenomenal.
At one point, I think Espada, he's called him this before. But he's like, he's kind of funky, you know, like he's like you know, the way Joe Espada describes somebody being unorthodox is very, very funny to me.
No, I did, and he doesn't quite look like a professional athlete in a good way. I like my baseball players that they almost look like.
Colton Gordon also, like, the two of them have been great, and both of them look like they play in a beer softball league. I like it.
Yes, they got a Danny Ainge quality to them. Like, what the hell? This guy, I thought this guy was, isn't this the guy from Three Cubicles Down? All right, no, he's a really good ball player.
That's right. All right, let's carry this one into the next segment. We'll talk more about the Texans. Be glad that Nick Caserio handles business the way he does, because when GM/owners don't handle it the way that Nick Caserio does, this is what happens. We'll have that for you. One ESPN NFL expert has the Texans at the tippy top of his list of teams. You'll want to hear that. And CJ Stroud on the new system that he's working in. We got a nice long segment coming up here at 7 o'clock as we continue live from Texans training camp on Sports Radio 610. Payne and Pendergast, stay there.